Blog Talk Radio.
Come on, good old Bob, was that nice? Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, tapping at my chamber door, "only this and nothing more." Ah, distinctly, I remember, it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow, vainly I had sought to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore, nameless here forevermore. And there's a lot more, but it's only an hour and a half show, so what the heck. Good evening. Welcome to Eerie House Oldie Timey Radio. That's two oldie timey radios in a row. That's strange. It's usually Eerie Time, Oldie Timey Radio, and then Eerie House Radio. See? But, hey, we're doing five shows this week. Something's got to give. And it's Great Apes tonight. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show here along with
Dave Binkley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And part of, we'll have to talk to us shortly about this too, part of the online virtual Goulardi Fest. Once again, there is no in-person Goulardi Fest this year. There's an online one, and we can talk a bit about that later. But yes, there we are.
Yes, yes. Oops, I forgot to post on the Big Chuck page. Oh, well. Dave probably had my back. He usually does.
Well, I normally do, but I on purpose didn't put it there because they have their big event this weekend, so I didn't want to try to take away any of their starlight. So
okay, good. I purposely forgot it for the same reason because I usually accidentally
forget. For the same reason.
I usually do accidentally forget. I'm yes. A marketing moron, but we have Grape Ape. I mean, Great Apes.
Yeah, and Grape Ape, and Grape Ape.
The funny thing is, Dave, I found out something weird while putting the ad together for today and the slideshow.
Yes.
You notice in the slideshow there is, in fact, a picture of Great Grape Ape.
Yep, all right.
So I do this general search for Grape Ape, and there's only like maybe out of 50 pictures, there's four of them of Grape Ape. The rest of them are of this purplish colored plant, which looks suspiciously like marijuana.
Really?
Apparently there is a flavor? Who knew? Of marijuana called Grape Ape. I did not know this. I promise you, I did not know this. Surprising as that may sound, I did not know this.
That's right. We take our things in liquid form, you know, our weaknesses in liquid form.
Wait,
so.
What were we just talking about? Oh, these Great Apes. Something affected my short-term memory. I have no idea what it is.
Yes, I think, we have two tales tonight. One is an adaption somewhere of some way of King Kong. And the other one Murder at Midnight. Anyway, that would be the ape song. So we got the bit of monkeying around tonight. And
a way long time ago, Dave, if you remember, when we first started doing the radio shows, I got this thing. Oh, we got to do a gorilla show, an ape show, and we did because I was exploring and studying Ngaji, and there was an Ngaji character on radio, and I think it was so long ago. I think I still had Eerie House TV running at the time, and we probably did a Monkey Weekend as well, And it was really cool. I mean, and yet you found more ape stories for us for tonight.
Well, and you know, here's the thing, too. There were a lot of really decent movies. You know, the gorilla can be used for comic effect or for not so comic effect. When you know, I'm thinking, you know, you got Nabanga and you got the Bride of the Gorilla, and there's a lot of them like that. But then you got the comedies where, you know, you had a guy in a gorilla suit who's just there adding to the comedy. You can't go wrong in a comedy with a gorilla suit.
Oh, especially the ones they had in the 30s and 40s. They even seemed to make their way into a number of Stooge shorts.
Yes.
I think in one of them, the gorilla talked. It was funny as heck. I helped. Yeah, it was something with Shump, as I recall.
Yeah.
But there was a run. It seemed like gorillas made their way into movies. The Ape Man. The Ritz Brothers were in a movie with gorillas that's in the public domain that I don't recall right now.
Yeah, it's called The Gorilla. Yeah.
There you go. Too easy to remember.
And what's funny is I really like that movie. You don't get to see a lot of the Ritz Brothers because somehow, you know, they were kind of a background for some other movie star that just that person never really came back. So you never really got to see the Ritz Brothers except in The Gorilla. And Harry Ritz, who was the brother that really kind of kept them all together, he hated this movie. They all hated it. They didn't want to do it. They were contractually bound. They delayed it for months before they finally came in and did it. I think it's a fun movie.
It is. It's one of the fun public domain movies to throw out there. And again, a chance to have some apey goodness.
Yeah. Yep.
And let's save the mystery. As bad as I really want to hear this King Kong episode you dug up, Dave. I think we should save best for last.
Okay.
Or what we hope is going to be the best. And we'll start off tonight with Murder at Midnight.
How are you guys say at midnight?
At midnight.
There you go.
And this one's called The Ape Song. And it's from
October 11th, 1946.
Making for the roof, but on the top floor we finally caught up with her.
Crane, please, that ape, get him out of here. I'll do anything.
You treated me like an animal, Cecily, and now an animal shall treat you as you deserve, choke you to death.
Midnight, the witching hour when the night is darkest and our fears the strongest. Our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a moment in The Ape Song. Murder at Midnight, tales of mystery and terror by radio's masters of the macabre. Our story by Peter Martin is The Ape Song. Night and fog shroud a nondescript freighter just in from Africa, and now unloading its cargo in New York Harbor. Down in the ship's deepest hold stands Crane Folliot, the famous big game hunter. Before him is an iron cage containing his latest conquest, a restless thing of panic and hysteria and insensate passions, a huge ape.
Quiet. Don't be afraid. I'm not going to kill you, hurt you. I've killed too much already. And besides, I need you to live, need your help. Now, that's better. Yes, my friend, you shall live to save me from death. A death in life.
I'll be taking him off in a minute.
Huh? Oh, good.
Lucky thing we were able to get a hold of another truck.
Why the university forgot to send their truck is beyond me. Still, I don't think keeping the animal in my cellar overnight will harm him or anybody.
Nah. Look at him shake, though. He's scared.
Well, not scared, exactly. That's because, like all apes taken from their natural habitat, he imagines he's in the presence of death.
Death?
Yes.
What's he doing now, opening and closing his mouth as if he were trying to sing or something?
How did you know?
No. Know what?
Oh, I'm sorry, no, you wouldn't know. They can sing, though.
Yeah?
They do. But only when they're in the presence of death. We rode home through the foggy night in the truck, the ape and I. The house was dark when we got there, and I had to give the driver and his helper an extra $20 to take the canvas-covered crate holding the ape around to the back door and into the cellar. Walking up the cellar stairs, I entered the front hall and...
What is it? Is that you?
Dr. Murchison.
Yes, welcome home.
What are you doing here?
Your wife was just going out when I came here, but she let me in and I've been waiting for you.
Waiting for me?
Yes. I was about to go myself when I heard the noise downstairs.
Oh, I suppose you want to know where the ape is. Well, he's downstairs in the cellar.
I see. Folliot, why did you bring the ape here rather than to my laboratory?
Well, the laboratory truck never arrived.
What? It's impossible. I personally arranged for it to meet you at the pier.
Why are you questioning me, Dr. Murchison? You don't really think I want an ape as a house guest, do you? The only thing I was interested in was to get the ape to a safe place until morning. Then I was going to call you.
I see.
Can't you wait to start cutting him up, whatever you intend to do with him? Do you want to take him with you now?
Well, you know that's impossible, Folliot. And you know we don't intend to cut him up.
Well, I'm sorry, Doctor, but the strain taking care of him, you know what delicate animals they are. Won't you come into my study and we can talk?
Thanks, Folliot, but now that I know he's safe, I must be running along.
As you wish. When will you send the truck around, take him to the laboratory?
Oh, around noon, I should say.
Good.
Get some sleep, man. You look terribly tired.
Yes, good, peaceful sleep at last.
Hello, someone's at the door.
Yes, I imagine it's my wife.
Oh, Crane.
Hello, Cecily.
You're back.
Yes.
Why?
Why? That's a strange question. You know Dr. Murchison, don't you?
Yes.
I was just about to leave, Mrs. Folliot.
You must excuse my wife, Doctor. She's so pleased at seeing me that she's forgotten her manners.
I understand. Well, I'll be in touch with you.
Brian?
Good night, Mrs. Folliot.
Good night. Crane. You promised you'd stay away until November.
Yes, I know I did. But the thought of you all alone in this big house doing nothing but waiting for me to return to your welcoming arms. What else could I do but rush home as quickly as I could, my dear?
Don't be sarcastic, Crane.
On the contrary, my dear. I'm not being half as sarcastic as I'd like to be.
Excuse me, I'm going to bed.
But don't you care for me just a little, Cecily? Just enough to kiss me goodnight.
Let me pass.
I've never asked very much of you, you know. No more than the friendly pat on the head you give to your dog.
I said, let me pass.
Yes, Cecily. But first, there's something I must tell you. How tired I am of being a hunter, of killing wild animals instead of enjoying the happiness of my home with you.
You seem to enjoy your hunting trips well enough. You're always going on them and bragging about them to everybody. Now, let me pass, Crane.
Please believe me, Cecily. Hunting is only a substitute. A very unsatisfactory substitute for the love I hope to receive from you. I never do.
I thought we'd settled all that.
Yes, but I never dreamed you'd treat me like some loathsome animal you couldn't bear near you as though I wasn't a man, but an ape.
When are you leaving on your next trip?
When?
Yes. Because until you do, I'm going away.
If you hate me so much, my dear, why don't you go to Reno and get divorced?
You know my family doesn't approve of divorce.
Of course they don't. Especially when it's a matter of losing the Folliot millions along with a husband.
How can you be so disgusting?
Something terrible has happened to me, Cecily. Something which forbids me ever to go hunting again.
Don't make silly excuses. You know you love to hunt.
Not anymore, Cecily. Something has happened that makes me terrified ever to hunt again.
What on earth are you talking about?
I really can't explain it, my dear. But on this last trip, every time I killed a wild animal, I imagined I was killing you. I watched her run up the stairs in terror. I heard the slam of her bedroom door. Stood there at the foot of the stairs for a moment, dazed, yet more certain than ever of what I had to do. And then quite unexpectedly, I felt the wet sting of tears on my cheeks. Yes, there were tears, but no sound. I thought of the ape in the hold of the ship silently opening and closing his mouth. Some outside force seemed to be guiding me now as though I was a mechanically controlled robot. I began walking down the hallway to the cellar door. The darkness didn't frighten me. It was my friend. I went down the cellar steps in perfect calm, never thinking to snap on the light. No, it was the darkness that soothed me, whispered to me. The darkness and the presence of my friend. He sensed me, of course. And more than that, he expected me. He knew I was coming. I went to him. There he was, outlined in the dim light of a faraway street lamp, coming into the cellar from the grating over my head. Yes, my friend. You want to be free, don't you? Yes, and why not be free? But before I let you out of your cage, we must understand each other. There is a price you must pay for your freedom. Am I really being so unreasonable? Listen, you shall do what I command you to do with an ecstasy of satisfaction, do you hear? For this time it is no animal you will see die, but a human being. And more than that, my friend, you will not only see her die, but you yourself shall kill her, shall avenge all the terrible deaths I have dealt your fellow brothers of the animal kingdom. Ah, I see you are pleased, and you should be. Didn't I kill your mate? But I tell you, Cecily drove me to it in my need to quench my murder lust against her. And now, my friend, you shall act as my conscience. You shall kill Cecily in revenge. Your spirit shall be my spirit, and Cecily will die. Yes, yes, you do understand. Here in my hand is the key to your cage, the key to your freedom and mine. We have made our bargain, haven't we? Yes, yes. We understand each other as though we were two brothers. Yes. Come on. Now, upstairs to her room. It is there that you shall sing at last. Yes, your song of freedom, your ape song.
And so man and ape start for the room of their victim. Start up the stairs side by side in the darkness as the clock strikes 12 for...
Murder at midnight.
Good heavens, is he going to turn that ape loose on his wife?
Well, it would serve him right for trying to monkey around on him.
That's right. That's right. And nice little tale here.
Well, and I'm surprised that you aren't, you hadn't mentioned, although you recognize, where do you recognize his voice from, Dale?
It sounds like one of the Raymonds.
It is Edward Raymond Johnson. Raymond Edward Johnson, yes. Who was, this was after he got back from serving in World War II and didn't get his gig back at Inner Sanctum. And this
which
was just
a,
one
which
of many.
Is a shame. An absolute shame.
Right. But this was one of many, many, many shows that he appeared upon and in. And a couple of them he also even hosted, but never quite reached the prominence he did with Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Well, he shows you he's a decent actor as well. He's really holding his own here.
Oh, absolutely. He's tearing it up.
Good actors make great hosts. E.G. Marshall is a wonderful actor. And look what he does with Mystery Theater. Arnold Moss hosted the Hallmark Hall of Fame program. And it just, they know what to do and how to say things, even if it's just something like a silly little announcement that they do as a host, you know?
Oh, yeah. Vincent Price is a great example. I mean, when he did
House
of Frankenstein and other things, he could jump right in with the camp, or he could play characters, or he could do anything.
Right. Yeah, it comes to mind The Price of Fear. He acted more or less as a host of where, you know, he acted in The Saint, you know. So, you know, I'm not just strictly talking radio there, but yeah. And so many wonderful suspenses that Vincent Price was in as well. But the true actors make great hosts. It's not something I think they really want to do in many cases, although E.G. Marshall sure ate it up. He played that for everything it was worth.
And quite nicely.
Absolutely.
Quite nicely.
So, yeah, a good old Murder at Midnight syndicated series. And that's why you get a lot of organ. It's Charles Paul and his magic organ. No, it wasn't magic, but
is that what he calls it?
His theme, his organ theme was Midnight, the Witching Hour. When the night is darkest, our fears are strongest, our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. I guess that was the words he wrote for it that they never did. They just played that organ.
And it's one of those I bet you Gar would like. He loves the organ in these old radio shows.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, we're hoping that he recovers soon. He sounded great this morning, but just couldn't make the show today.
Yep. Yeah, I talked to him for a bit this morning as he called and played his gazoo for me, and so you could tell, you know, if he's whipping out his gazoo and his harmonica, he's feeling okay, but kind of had a relapse again this afternoon, unfortunately. So hopefully he'll be up for the Horrible Horror starring that guy we know as Gar the Ghoul, who is one of our brethren right here.
That's right.
So
we have brethren and sistern.
Yep. And maybe the sistern will call in to be part of the show tonight. Who knows?
She's
sitting there in a chat room. She's sitting there in a chat room. She should pick up that phone and
dial
carefully.
Yeah, we see you there with your plague doctor beak sticking out.
Yep.
We'd love to have you
join
us
for
King Kong and for the rest of Murder at Midnight.
Yeah, so, you know, while she's dialing carefully, hopefully, we can get into part two here.
The Ape Song.
And now back to Murder at Midnight and the Ape Song. Crane Folliot and his ape continue up the steps to Cecily's room.
We went up the cellar stairs together. And it didn't seem strange when the ape took my hand as though wishing me to guide him. And then for a moment I was afraid of trouble. The ape became fascinated with the heavy carpeting in the hallway, patting it with his hand as an infant plays with sand. But finally I got him to stand up and come with me. We made hardly any sound as we climbed the main staircase leading to her room.
Who is it?
What is it, my dear? What's the matter?
Oh, something in the room. I hear it. I see its eyes.
But that's fantastic, my dear.
There it is. Crane, what are you doing to me?
I see nothing. I hear nothing.
Crane, let go of my arm.
In a moment, but won't you kiss me, please?
You're going to kill me.
Oh, no, not I. Come, aren't you going to kiss me just once, as you used to in the old days?
All right. Yes, anything.
But let me go.
Good. Now, let me hold you in my arms.
Oh, Cecily, I need you so. Why have I lost you? Why did you forsake me, Cecily?
Go!
Cecily, come back. Don't run. You can't get away. Very well, if that's the way you want it. It was quite a chase. I followed them as they ran through the house from room to room, floor to floor. She seemed to be making for the roof, but I knew if she got away from me, she'd never, never shake off the ape. Finally, on the top floor, we caught up with her in the attic.
Crane! Please! Please, that ape! Get him out of here, Crane! I'll do anything!
You treated me like an animal, Cecily. And now an animal shall treat you as you deserve. Choke the life out of you. There she is! Over there in the corner.
No! No, Crane!
She made me kill your mates. Kill her! Kill her! Kill her! Goodbye, Cecily.
I felt wonderful. I stood over her body and thought I could smell the sea and hear the pounding of the clean waves. And I felt sleepy again. Really sleepy again. I knew I could sleep now. I don't know how long I stood there or how long the doorbell was ringing until I remembered that it wasn't I that had killed her, but the ape. I was safe. Why not go downstairs and open the door?
Couldn't get a taxi, and I wanted to see the ape first thing in the morning anyway, so I thought I'd come back to that comfortable sofa of yours.
Dr. Murchison, the ape has escaped.
Escaped?
Yes, he jumped out of a window into a tree after killing my wife.
Foliot, what are you saying?
Yes, right after you left. The first I knew of it was when she screamed. I ran upstairs to her room, but...
Queer.
What was that?
I merely said it was queer. I can't tell you how sorry I am, Foliot, for you.
Sorry? For me?
Shouldn't I be?
I'm in a way. Yes, it's lucky you did come back. We'll have to organize a search for the ape, of course. Call the police.
Yes. I am sorry for you, Foliot. Terribly sorry.
The days that followed were the happiest of my life. At the inquest, the coroner's verdict was death by accidental strangulation. The ape could not be found, and the official opinion was that he drowned in the river, his body carried out to sea. Everything had worked out perfectly until I began to become aware of something strange and frightening and horrible. All this was happening to me. One day on the street...
You dropped a coin, sir.
Oh, thanks, that dime. I have it.
Did you hurt your finger? Here, let me pick it up for you.
Thank you. My thumb... Somehow I can't seem to bring it across. My thumb was no longer opposable. I couldn't bring it across my fingers. I never realized what it could mean until a few days later at a ball game.
Get your scorecard at the game. Can't tell nothing without a scorecard, mister.
Never mind.
Come on, mister. Only a dime a scorecard. You don't want to spoil the pleasure of the game just for a dime, do you?
Move on, you idiot.
Yeah, who are you? A quiz kid or something?
I said get out of here.
Take your hands off of me, you ape, you. What was happening to me? I could hardly force myself to think about it, but I had to, especially after what happened at my club.
I say there, fellow, you old man, have a seat and a chat.
Thank you, Sam, but I've got to be going.
Yes, of course. I see.
You see what?
Lumbago, eh? Can't straighten up your back. Going to a doctor, eh?
You think it would help, do you?
I don't know. But you certainly can't spend the rest of your life bending over like that with your hands hanging halfway to your knees.
A half hour later, I was in Murchison's office.
Now, now, you must take it easy, Foliot. We all have our off days, you know.
You've got to help me, Dr. Murchison. You don't know what I'm going through.
I wonder. You do look rather...
I can't stand wearing shoes anymore. They're torture me. And I can't straighten my back up.
Have you ever had rheumatism? Any severe back injury?
Rheumatism? You sit there talking like that when I've caught myself making sounds like an ape? Don't you realize what's happening? That's what I'm becoming, an ape. You're a psychiatrist, aren't you? We'll do something. You've got to do something.
Quit your whimpering and listen. I can help you. But only if you cooperate.
I'll do anything.
Admit you arranged for your wife's murder.
What?
With the ape's help. Everything points to it, Folliot. Bringing the ape to your house. Your strange behavior before and after I left. And now the transference.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's quite simple. Arranging for the ape to strangle your wife put you legally in the clear. But you can't strangle your guilt. You can only suppress it. And unconsciously in your guilt, you have taken on the actual characteristics of the ape.
If you say that again, I'll kill you.
Killing me would only prove your guilt twice over. Be sensible, Folliot. Trust me. I've taken extensive note on your case.
You've taken notes?
Yes, because I knew that some sort of reaction would set in. Folliot, no, no, keep away from me.
So, you're going to turn me over to the police. You're against me, too. Everyone's against me, trying to hunt me down, but you won't get me. You won't.
Please, stop crying.
I dropped him, and he fell to the floor gasping. And then I tore open the door and ran. I didn't know where I was going, what I was going to do next. I only knew I had to hide. I found an abandoned house, hid in the cellar, and there in the darkness, it all became clear. Ape. The ape who had killed Cecily. I was the ape. That meant he was Crane Folliot, and that meant... Yes. I had to find him somehow. Kill him for killing Cecily. And that way become my old self again. Ape, where could I go? Where would I hide if I were he? Where there is green, yes, and trees, and rocks. Ape, yes, in the park. Night in the park, I threw off my shoes and walked barefoot, concealed in the night as I hunted my mortal enemy. Piece by piece, I discarded my clothes, my jacket, my shirts, my trousers, walking like the animal I had become. My eyes were sharper than they'd ever been. I could see even in the darkness. And then... as the moon started to go down, I climbed a ridge. There were caves, cages, stone houses, the zoo. And then I heard something that made the hair prickle on the back of my neck. My fingers itched and my body shook as I heard the sounds that told me I had found my enemy, the ape. I jumped down toward the sounds, my lips puffing in and out with my heavy breathing, my head pounding like a trip hammer, my entire body aflame with the hot blood of murder. I ran to where the sounds came from, and there was a locked steel door. The ape was snarling, daring me to come near him. I ran around to the other side, wrenched a fire axe from the wall, and came back to the door. I smashed at the lock with the sharp edge of the axe, opened the door, and leaped into the cage. He reared at me with his hind legs, and I sprang at his throat.
Holy moses! Jake, get your gun quick! There's a man in there! Let me up there!
Die for killing Cecily! And die in me, too! Let me be Folliot! Folliot, do you hear?
Watch out! The cage is open!
Dead! Miss dead! And I free!
There he is, Chick. Let him have it.
Yes, said he. I pronounce him dead.
Who'd have thought a man could make a sound like that? It was dark, and we thought the ape had killed him, so Jake just fired.
What gets me is his trying to kill an ape with his bare hands and doing it.
In his crazed mind, this was the same ape he provoked into killing his wife.
I'll never forget that sound as long as I live. Never.
A complete transference into ape. Yet he could have been saved. Look at them lying on the ground. Too bad we couldn't have gotten here a minute sooner.
Sure left an easy trail, dropping his shoes and clothes after him piece by piece.
Ape and men on the ground, side by side.
It ain't pretty.
His toes turned in, puffs of hair from the ape's throat still clutched between his fingers, his teeth biting into his lower lip. Poor Folliot. Or should I say poor humans? How close to animals we really are.
Two bodies lying side by side in the darkness, with no one to say which was the victim, as the clock strikes 12 for
murder at midnight. Remember to be with us again when death pads through the night with glowing eyes and the clocks strike 12 for murder at midnight.
The part of the big game hunter was played by Raymond Edward Johnson. With music by Charles Paul, Murder at Midnight was directed by Anton M. Leder.
Perfume, and it's not cars.
I put it on for you, big guy.
Thank you, Dave. I feel good all under. Actually, I hear the pitter-pat of the tiny feet of CW.
Clunk, 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 clunk.
Big shoes.
Yippers. Well, greetings and felicitations, and many happy the returns of the day to someone there, if I'm not mistaken.
Must be you she's talking to, Dale.
No, sir. You're the birthday man, not I.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, CW.
You're more than welcome.
I'm now for about 3 months. Equal to Dale in age, so.
Yeah.
But that won't last long.
No, wow. Man.
Meow.
Yeah. Growl. Jeez.
Well, before we move along, is there something we can learn from this story? Perhaps?
No, there's nothing.
Nothing?
I have
nothing
a capable future thought.
Well,
wow.
I have something. GGSI Paper gave me the idea, if you want to theme me in.
Sure.
Oh, theme her in. Theme her in.
Oh. Be not Mark. Eerie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
If opposable thumbs are required to strangle someone, you still give it a try because you might get away with it. Thank you, GGSI Paper.
Not sure that guy has opposable thumbs, but whatever.
I wonder what he stepped on. Yeah.
I don't know. He stepped on it all right. All right.
Sounds like he stepped on a Lego.
Oh, yes. That's one of the worst things imaginable. For them, what has
well,
children?
Just, yep.
Or
you're just in time for King Kong, CW.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I was hoping I wouldn't miss it.
And you didn't. And you joined us, and we're grateful.
Yes.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Yeah, I had no idea.
We get
under the weather. Get well, Gar. Feel better. Feel better.
Yeah. He was, what's odd is, you know, I talked to him some on Wednesday, and he was fine. He was on the, he didn't make it on the broadcast then, or he did make it on Wednesday. Went Thursday, he did not. I talked to him this morning as he called and kazooed happy birthday to me. And obviously he was feeling pretty good. Then he whipped out his harmonica and played something. If that was happy birthday, okay. He needs a little work. But it was, so obviously he was feeling pretty good this morning. But unfortunately, it smacked him down this afternoon.
So he was feeling fine until he talked to you.
Yeah, okay. Wait.
Ouch. Now play nice.
The claws are out. Oh, my goodness.
Christmas. I mean, holy Halloween. Thank you.
Yeah, wait. Let's not mess up our holidays here.
Geez, Dave, if you timed it just a little bit more, you could have actually been born on Halloween. What were you thinking?
Well, you know, I was never a patient person, so what can I say?
Born in a hurry.
Actually, if any of you are have seen Kathleen Walder on our shows, we have traced it back. We are actually cousins, distant cousins.
I did.
Several times removed. For some reason, my family got removed several times. Anyway, she and I were born less than 48 hours apart in different parts of the state of Ohio. Born less than 48 hours apart, and here we are, cousins. So I thought
identical
cool
cousins all the way. They laugh alike, they talk alike. Times they even host alike. You can lose your mind.
Okay, Patty. All right, Patty, move it along.
Real quick,
step away from the song.
Yeah. I was mentioning to Dave yesterday, actually it was on the show we were talking about, I have obtained in my youth a wonderful book, The Making of King Kong, and it gets into everything, like even the sound effects. They took lion's roars and played them backwards at half speed, and that's where they got some of the dinosaur roars.
Oh, cool. Very nice.
And does the book tell you about how Faye Ray was expecting Cary Grant to be her leading man?
No.
I was not aware of that little piece of
history.
Well, RKO's Blonde Bombshell Extraordinaire was given the leading role in the original King Kong. But all she was told at the time about her male co-star was that he was the tallest, darking leading man in Hollywood. So naturally, she expected Cary Grant. Instead, she found herself in the grip, literally, of a 24-foot-tall ape. Kong actually stood only 18 feet tall, but during the first half of the movie in which he was portrayed in Skull Island, however, the filmmakers decided to scale him up for New York City scenes to compensate for the high-rises. But, yeah, she was expecting Cary Grant as her leading man, not a King Kong.
Oh, and another good thing about Faye Ray, Jamie Lee Curtis, known as one of the Scream Queens, gave a bit of an homage in a podcast I was listening to about her doing another stint with the Halloween franchise, you know, making note that the very first Scream Queen, in the talkies anyway, would be the one and only Faye Ray.
True.
Yeah,
if you think about it, she was the penultimate and the original Scream Queen.
Yeah, she earned her title Scream Queen for her flawless depiction of a terrified damsel in distress in King Kong. She did all of her screams in one afternoon, post-production session.
Wow.
That hurts thinking about. Yeah, but what a pair of lungs.
My throat's hurting thinking about it. Well, it could be tobacco. Could be the tobacco. One never knows.
Grab a Marlboro, we'll be fine. Yeah, you're right.
There you go. One in each hand. All right, so we should probably get started with what time we got left.
Yep, yep.
And here comes part one of the king, the main monkey, the man of the hour. And he's hairy, too.
Yeah, that's the old ship sitting out there, the SS Sumatra. A good ship, but I never want to sail with her again. I was her captain for many years, mostly the South Pacific, Surabaya, the Philippines, Java, Ceylon, and up and down the west coast of India. Ah, we had adventures, this old steel lady and me. But the last one was the worst one. It was a long time ago, but I'll never forget it. I still wake up at night screaming, and I don't scare easily. The newspapers carry the story of Kong. King Kong was what Denham called the beast. Who was Denham? I'll tell you the story about Denham, Driscoll, Ann, and the monster, King Kong. I first met Denham, I think it was in 1932. Yeah, we were laid up here in New York Harbor. No cargo, no credit. A full crew to pay, and I had no money. It was winter, a heavy snow, Christmas coming. And if the devil came up that gangplank and asked me to sail him to hell, if he had the money, I would have given him the best cabin and sailed on the first tide. This was my cabin. I remember sitting here very worried when Driscoll, my first mate, knocked on the door. Come.
The man came aboard, Captain, says he must see you.
Mr. Driscoll, if he's a bill collector, tell him I've jumped ship.
He drove up to the dock in a chauffeur-driven car.
So? Well, don't stand there. Tell him I'll be delighted to see him.
That's what he said. Come in, sir. Captain Engelhorn, Mr. Denham.
Sit down, sir.
Thank you.
And what can I do for you?
Captain, I want to charter your boat. I'm Denham of Denham Motion Pictures Incorporated. My company makes travel films. I want you to take me, my cameraman, an actor or two, to the Southwest Pacific. I've been told you're familiar with the area.
More than familiar. The Pacific is where I got my sea legs and learned my trade. Where exactly is your destination?
That's something I can't tell you until we get there.
Well, a ship must have a destination, a point on the chart to sail to, Mr. Denham.
I have the exact longitude and latitude. I'll give them to you after we reach the East Indies. Now, for the services of your ship, crew, yourself, I'm prepared to pay a more than generous sum.
A more than generous sum? Well, times were bad. And a sailor might just as well be a farmer if he's not at sea. I agree to Mr. Denham's deal. But if I could have seen ahead, I would have thrown Mr. Denham overboard.
Secure that number three hatch.
Right
up. Go away. Easy now.
Mr. Driscoll.
Sir.
I want to hoist anchors and sail on the ebb tide.
Anxious to get underway?
I get sick living on shore too long.
Well, engine room reports steam is up the full.
Well, I'd be glad to get away from this cold.
Oh, heading south then?
South and east. And that's all I know. Well, Mr. Denham is punctual. Send two men down to help him with his gear, Mr. Driscoll.
Aye, sir. There's a woman with him.
I recognize the outlines, Mr. Driscoll.
Two men to the dock!
And make ready to cast off, Mr. Driscoll.
Aye, sir.
Denim and his movie people came aboard and were shown to the cabins below decks. Anne Darrow, a beautiful young lady, was an out-of-work actress who asked no questions. She had a job, and the idea of spending time in the tropics appealed to her. Stand by to cast off all lines. Single up, Mr. Driscoll.
Single up! Haul and aft!
Cast off, Mr. Driscoll.
Let's go! Haul and aft!
Helmsman, all astern, slow. Let the tide take her.
Aye, aye, sir.
Hard a port.
Hard a port, yes, sir.
Now, midships.
Midships, yes, sir.
All ahead, slow.
All ahead, slow, sir.
Take over the helm, Mr. Driscoll. I'll give you the new course when we clear the Ambrose Light.
Aye, sir. I relieve you now, sir.
I'll be below to check with our passengers.
Aye, sir. I tried very hard to be friendly with Mr. Denham, but that was very difficult. So we arrived at a working agreement. He was in charge of his crew. I was in charge of the ship. But nothing I could say would get Denham to give me the slightest hint of our destination. I even had Driscoll speak with the girl. He was, at that time, a handsome young man, and I knew he upheld the traditions of the sea by having a girl in every port.
No, I'm not much of an actress, just a beginner, and this is quite a chance for me.
What are you supposed to do? Has Denham shown you a script?
No, he said we'd play the scenes as they happened. It's a travelogue, so I suppose I'll be sitting around watching natives dance, or fish, or hunt, or something like that.
Well, that doesn't seem like too much.
I'm the only actor in the company, so it'll be plenty for me.
I see.
Well, Mr. Driscoll, what do you think of our star?
As pretty as I've ever seen, Mr. Denham.
I thought sailors only talk that way in books.
Oh, there's a bit of truth in everything, Miss Darrow.
I might be able to use that line, Mr. Driscoll. And I want to run some film tests. The camera's set up front.
Forward, Mr. Denham.
Yeah, forward. Up ahead in the nose of the boat.
The prow is what it's called.
Oh, you know what I mean. And put on some makeup, eyeshadow, lipstick. We'll take a look.
He's not much of a sailor.
He'll learn, or Captain Engelhorn will toss him to the sharks. Well, you better go along. Up to the nose of the boat.
Denham had set up cameras up forward on the foredeck. He had the girl leaning on a bollard. The weather was getting warmer as we headed south. A good ship, a calm sea, and people going about their work.
Okay, Anne.
Yes.
Look around. Roll the cameras. Action. Anne, look to your right. Now look left. Now, look at me. That's right. Now, you see something.
Oh.
You don't know what it is. Slowly now. You're amazed by it. Hold that. Now you become frightened. It's nothing you've ever seen before. It's coming closer.
Oh.
Closer. Closer. You're too frightened to run. You're helpless. You can't scream. You're trying to hide it from your eyes. Good. Now scream. Scream! Scream for your life! It was only a simple scream test, just to see how well Anne can follow direction.
But, Mr. Denham, it would seem to me you had some purpose.
The poor kid was terrified. She's in her cabin now. Won't let anyone come near her.
Oh, that just means she's a good actress.
There's something you're not telling us, Denham.
That's perfectly correct, mister. And I don't intend to set in until I'm ready. You'll tell us now, Denham. Now, look, mister. I chartered this ship. You go where I tell you to go, and when I tell my actress to scream, she screams. And it's none of your business, sailor.
Mr. Driscoll! Relay that! Mr. Driscoll! Stop that! Mr. Driscoll, you will go on deck and cool your temper. Mr. Denham, you will go below to your cabin.
Oh, don't give me any orders. I don't go downstairs for anybody.
The expression is below, Mr. Denham. I am master of life and death aboard this vessel. And you will go below, or I will have you locked in the brig. A brig means a prison, Mr. Denham. Mr. Driscoll?
Aye, sir.
You better behave as a first mate should. If you expect to command your own ship, you cannot make clear decisions when your mind is muddled with personal feelings. The safety of the ship and her crew is your first concern. You can break Denham's neck when we're safe in port. Is that clear?
Aye, aye, sir. Very clear.
Somewhere off Hatteras, we ran into bad weather. The waves were running high and the sea broke over the bridge. As sometimes happens in a storm, we shook loose some of the cargo. I sent Driscoll below to make everything secure. He was a good sailor, so I left it all in his hands. But below decks, in number two hold... This is the captain.
May I come below, sir?
Problems, Mr. Driscoll?
Yes, sir. You better come and take a look.
In the older type ships, you had to cross the deck to get to the cargo hatches. Safety lines were rigged and I held on for dear life. As I crossed the deck to number two hold, I was annoyed with Driscoll, but I knew he would never call me unless he had a good reason.
These crates tore loose, Captain. This one broke open.
God in Himmel! Denham has enough here to start a war.
Dynamite, hand grenades, there's a case of high-powered rifles, ammunition, gas grenades.
Why would he need these to make movies?
Yes, sir, that's what I was wondering.
Just nail up the crates and say nothing.
Aye, sir.
Denham said all he was carrying was motion picture equipment and supplies for 6 months. As far as I'm concerned, that's all he is carrying.
Aye, sir.
We know of nothing else. None of these guns and dynamite will be unloaded from the ship. Keep the hatch closed and locked, Mr. Driscoll. And give me the keys.
So far, it is following the story very faithfully.
Yep, and I hear the wonderful actor Ralph Bell. He's the director and the guy that's paying for the expedition. Ralph Bell is all over the place. A ton of radio mystery theaters, X-1s, suspenses, you name it. He was there during the 50s and certainly into the mystery theater era as well.
I'm loving this. I mean, this is just giving me more nuances into the whole story than I think the movie kind of skipped over.
To some degree, the characters are largely the same. I mean, you've got Driscoll. You've got, the captain. You've got Andero, of course.
Mm-hmm.
A fine screamer. Well, maybe I should rephrase that. But anyway...
Here's another nuance you might not have known about King Kong. There is a King Kong musical. Believe it or not. With something as large and theatrical as King Kong, it's difficult to imagine not going the way of the big musical, stage production. The show hit the stage in Australia back in 2013. It was met with mixed reviews. One thing critics agreed upon, that the grandiose of King Kong was stage-worthy, having a presence that could only be described as spectacular. It was a visual and technical success, prompting Anne-Marie Peard to write that it was all, quote, so sensory, sensational that's easy to forgive the inconsistent style and questionable portrayal of women, unquote. She went on to note that the story was lackluster and the songs were forgettable. Others criticized it for relying too heavily on the notion that we all know the story and leaving confusing gaps in the narrative. Peard maintains that such a play has the potential to be a game changer, so maybe we haven't seen the last of Kong the Musical.
Yes, it was all about me.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Oh, and in the chat room, there's Rob Smith Jr. And
hi, Rob Smith.
And eBay. Yeah. What was that?
That's Linda Liu.
Linda Liu
joins us.
Yes.
For some King Kong. Good old Bob and GGSI paper.
Yeah, for those that came in late, DeGar was still a bit under the weather. He's feeling better this morning, but then had a relapse this afternoon. So we're all hoping that he'll be back for a brand new horrible horror with Gar the Ghoul, starring Gar the Ghoul, tomorrow night at 8 p.m. at his usual time.
On the eve of Halloween.
Yeah, today's day four of Halloween week here on Erie House Radio. We'll talk a little bit later on about what we're doing tomorrow, which I think some of you may know already. Well, let's get on with the second part of our three-part adaptation of King Kong.
We made good time on our way through the Panama Canal into the Pacific, through every type of weather. Now the skies were clear and blue, as the days grew from warm to hot. On a course of south by west, past Pitcairn Island, Rapa, then along the Tropic of Capricorn, almost to the Fijis, then at 20 degrees south latitude and 160 degrees longitude west from Greenwich, with New Caledonia dead ahead. Come. Ah, Mr. Denham.
Captain, I believe we've been making excellent time.
That depends on where we're heading.
You know Lord Howe Island?
Dead south of us, Mr. Denham.
Then change course southeast of Howe Island to 40 degrees south and 140 degrees 20 minutes east latitude. That's our destination.
My charts show no islands there?
That's the fault of the charts, Captain. I assure you that there is an island there, and that is our destination.
And for what reason, Mr. Denham?
The weirdest, wildest, most impossible thing you've ever seen. I'm going to make a movie the likes of which has never been made before. Have you ever heard of the word Kong?
There are many things I haven't heard.
And I, Captain. I first heard about Kong some 5 years ago. The man who told me was mad, raving. I would have dismissed the whole story if I hadn't seen a few feet of film he brought back. What I saw was enough to start me on my way. And frankly, Captain, now that we're almost there, I'm a little scared.
You aren't the first man to be scared by a rumor.
Now, you forget the film.
I include the film. You know, lights and shadows make strange images. That is all your Kong is, believe me.
Part of me would like to believe you, but the other half knows better.
Then what is Kong, if not imagination?
Not imagination, Captain. Kong is some strange kind of giant beast.
Helmsman, all ahead slow.
Trolling up fast, Captain, so run aground.
Helmsman, all stop. Let go the anchors, Mr. Driscoll.
Let go, Bones!
Captain Engelhorn, do you hear the drums?
Nothing unusual about drums in this part of the world. Call away, number one boat, Mr. Driscoll.
Stand by, number one boat!
We headed for shore, and the closer we came to the island, the more I was sorry we left our guns aboard the Sumatra. The beach was lined with native warriors, armed with spears and shields. I would not call it a hospitable welcome. Behind the beach, the forest began, and rising above the trees, a most incredible sight. A wall perhaps 40 feet high, made all of stone and running the length of the island as far as I could see. I looked at Denham and remembered the story he had told of Kong. For the first time, I began to believe that he was telling the truth. Anything seemed possible now.
Mr. Driscoll, look. That native girl.
Captain, there in the center. There's a girl tied hand and foot.
Stand to, Mr. Driscoll. Don't try to be a hero. These people have their own customs. Listen now, all of you. If you're frightened, don't show it. This is good acting practice for all of us, Mr. Denham.
You go. This land trouble. Stranger not belong. Many death here.
Chief, we come from far away. Ship sails very long time. We hear of Kong.
Kong, not for you. Kong, mighty killer. We give girl. She goes stay alone with Kong. 1 year time.
The girl's a sacrifice.
Your woman with gold hair. You give to great Kong. I give you many things.
Driscoll, get Anne out of here, back to the boat. Move. Great chief. Woman with golden hair, not for Kong. She belongs to us. Get him. Stop back slowly. No panic. Mighty chief. Very powerful. Me, chief. I'm more powerful. Girl with golden hair belong me. Get him. Pull back. He's thinking it over. Then he makes up his mind, we'd better be off this island.
Hi!
It was a close call. We had raced the boat beyond the breakers when the natives reached the beach. Safe on board the ship, I tried to get Denham to leave the island, but his desire for making movies got the better of his judgment. I agreed to stay when he promised he'd leave Anne aboard ship. The drums sounded throughout the night. We could see the flickering campfires on the beach. I thought of that poor native girl tied up as a sacrifice for Kong. We slept fitfully that night. Then, sometime during the middle watch, Driscoll informed me that Anne was missing. We searched the ship, but she had gone. Anne had been taken by a war party of natives who had climbed aboard and captured her. Anne was to be a sacrifice to Kong. From the sounds coming from the island, there was little time for action. Mr. Driscoll!
Aye, sir.
Get 5 men, open up number 2 hold. Mr. Denham, I will overlook your bringing arms aboard this ship without permission. You will come along with a party. On the double, Mr. Driscoll. See that rifles, ammunition, hand grenades, gas grenades are issued to all the men.
Now, you go to Kong. Save him. Make song. Tell children stories of woman with gold hair. Aye! You wait. And all quiet. Come, come, take you.
Thank you.
I've never seen anything that huge, Mr. Denham. We should have brought cannon. Rifles will be of little use against a monster that size.
We must get Anne. We can't leave her.
No one is leaving the girl. But can we fight that beast?
You can stay here and discuss what you're going to do. I'm going after Kong.
Kong, like a heavy tank, broke through the rainforest. Trees had fallen before him, and he left footprints 12 feet long. From time to time, we could see Kong's great head over the treetops. This was a nightmare world we had come to. We were now in what seemed to be a slice of prehistoric times which somehow found a way to survive until now. All around us were gigantic ferns, strange trees and animals, great lizards that should have been long since dead. Had it not been for the thought of the girl, I would have turned back many times. I am brave enough in the world, I know, but here... The trail of Kong led us through what looked like a prehistoric wing of a museum come to life. Denham, in spite of the dangers, took time to identify the beasts as we saw them. Stegosaurus, Triceratops, Megatherium, Megaceraps, Hyanodon, flying things, crawling things. It would have interested me more if they didn't look at us like we were a good meal on the move.
He's up ahead, Captain.
What about Anne?
Alive so far.
How far ahead?
Kong is across a deep ravine, about 1,000 feet drop to the bottom. Maybe 100 feet across. There might be a way to go around it.
If the girl is alive, we cannot take the chance of going around. I had the men cut down a large tree and drop it across the chasm to use it as a bridge. On the other side, I could see Kong. I was certain we were near his lair. First, I sent four of my men across. The beast saw them. He gently placed Anne down on the ground, and then he started for the log. Those four men held on for dear life as that giant monster shook and rolled the log. Finally, Kong lifted the 100-foot tree and slammed it back on the ground. The log was cracked, but in place across the chasm. The four men were dead. And Kong guarded the far edge of the chasm. We had no choice but to go back. Anne was lost.
Look. Over there.
What kind of beast is that? It's going for Anne.
Tried to scare it off.
Kong. Kong sees it. What is that thing?
Can't tell exactly. It's something like Tyrannosaurus. Paleosynchus. A man-eater.
This was a band of prehistoric monsters come to life, while we modern men, armed with modern weapons, were powerless to do anything. While the two giants fought, Driscoll picked up Anne, who had fainted from shock, and raced across the cracked tree which lay across the chasm. Kong had defeated a 30-foot lizard that stood 18 feet tall. Kong would catch us. There was no escape, no place of safety, except maybe one. That was down the side of the chasm to the rushing river. We started down. Kong stood above us, glaring down at us. The huge ape pulled us, but trying not to kill us. I couldn't understand why he let us live. And then I realized that monstrosity, that relic from a million years ago, had a heart. It didn't want to hurt the girl. Kong seemed almost human then. I almost knew what he would do next. He would meet us downstream, someplace where he could get Anne without harming her, and kill the rest of us.
middle of the river while Khan followed us along the banks, roaring and beating his chest. And then we saw the rock cavern that led the river underneath the huge wall out to safety. Khan left us little choice. We cried, smiling at each other, then took deep breaths and let the current carry us through to the other side of the wall and safety.
And that's part two of King Kong. They are on the run.
On the run, yep. I know we don't have a lot of time between segments here, Dale, but I did pull up something from your and my past Saturday mornings here. And just a quick minute.
King Kong, you know the name of King Kong.
Oh,
you
wow.
Know the name of King Kong. Wow. 10 times as big as a man.
That's awesome, Dave.
Well done. Bravo.
Quick stroll down memory lane. Let's wrap up King Kong so we have time to make some cheap announcements. When we're done,
yep.
We'll be back.
Anne, are you all right?
Oh, that thing, that horrible thing. I thought I was losing my mind. I'll never be able to forget it. Never. Never as long as I live.
Anne, don't think about it. That's the end of Kong. Captain, we'd make a fortune if we could bring Kong alive to the States.
I'd rather be a live sea captain, Mr. Denham.
Just think about it. Denham Enterprises presents King Kong.
Bravo. I don't think that big ape would sign a contract, Denham. Go ahead, ask him.
Run for the shore.
He's seen us.
Go on. Run. I'm going to try and get him.
He'll rip you to bits, Denham. Come on.
Let go. A couple of gas grenades ought to stop him dead. One over, one under, one in front.
It's still coming.
Three of those would have put a regiment to sleep. It's impossible.
Complain to the company who made them.
Get to the boat.
Come on, Denham.
Wait! The gas grenades! They're working!
Mr. Denham, I think you're a very brave but foolish man. He's all yours.
Yeah. He's all...
And Denham is all mine. I'll take him to the boat.
Poor Kong. He looks so harmless now.
It took most of a day to get Kong out to the ship and placed in the hold. I had anchor chain welded over the hatch. We had a pretty good prison for the giant ape. Kong was beaten and he knew it. He did nothing except now and then trying to knock out the sides of the ship. Only Anne could calm him down. She would stand by the hatchway and speak to the beast.
Poor thing. Poor Kong. No one will hurt you. Anne is here.
Couldn't hurt him if we tried.
It's a little sad to see anything in captivity.
Oh, he's done enough damage in his day, Anne.
He was only protecting himself.
And we were only trying to protect you.
Were you?
Let's get away from your friend before you...
The There is an old sailor's wish, calm sea and prosperous voyage, which we had going back. Mr. Driscoll and Anne asked me to be best man, but I was captain and couldn't marry them if I accepted that honor. Mr. Denham was best man. Anne and Driscoll became man and wife. When we sailed into New York Harbor, we were a happy ship carrying the strangest cargo ever to come into that port. Denham had a theater rented in the middle of New York City, in Times Square. There were plenty who'd pay to see this prehistoric killer, and just as many who thought Kong was a fake, but would pay just to oo and ah. Kong was no longer the beast from that prehistoric jungle. He was frightened and beaten, and he went wherever Denham took him. Kong seemed like some monstrous organ grinder's monkey. It was the first night that Kong was to be shown. The theater was plastered with signs. King Kong, the name Denham had given the great ape. Denham asked me to be in the audience, to introduce me as the captain who shared all the dangers. Driscoll and Anne were also there. Denham said love interest was very important. In spite of himself, he was a brave man, and that we had to respect. The curtain went up.
Ladies and gentlemen, a beast out of history, out of place, out of time, a sight once seen by cavemen, but never before viewed by modern man. Ladies and gentlemen, King Kong!
Kong, frightened by the sounds of a strange world, began pulling at his huge chains. He looked out into the audience, and he saw Anne. We rushed her out of the theater. As the crowds panicked, Kong trampled them as he went after Anne. Kong loose in the city, police and fire departments useless as Kong began his search for the girl. The city came to a stop. No place was safe. There was no place to hide as Kong raged up and down the streets, crushing everything in his way. Driscoll and I hurried Anne back to the ship with the idea of getting underway and out to sea, but we never would have made it. Kong, with that logic peculiar to the great apes, made his way to the river and to the ship. He saw us. He saw Anne. And then the great monster reached out. He took Anne.
Army Air Force, Roosevelt Field, office of the base being. Yes, sir, there's a fighter squadron. Well, I suggest you call the zoo. We don't handle monkeys here. What? You're kidding. Right away.
All pilots, man your planes. Condition red. Repeat. Condition red. This is not an exercise. Repeat. This is not an exercise.
Kong destroyed all in his way. All we could do was to follow. It was impossible to shoot at him for fear of hitting Anne. Kong, in a panic, looking for safety, found the only place he thought he would be safe. Slowly, carrying Anne gently in one paw, he began to climb the Empire State Building, 102 stories into the air, over 1,000 feet from the ground. The crowds below were silent with fear. The only sound was Anne. Suddenly, from a long way away, sound of hope for the city, and maybe the end for Anne. The fighter planes were coming in, biplanes, each with two machine guns and a few bombs. Driscoll heard them and started into the building, pushing through the line of police. Dawn was just breaking. And there they were, nine fighter planes flying straight towards Kong. He held the girl high up in the air. The planes zoomed away.
Red Leader, that thing's holding a girl in his paw. Jack, come around for another pass. Don't fire until I signal. Red Leader to all elements. Forget the girl, shoot to kill. Can't do that. 8 million people in that city down there. Only one girl up here. Follow me in. Be love. He's putting her down.
My God, what kind of a thing is that? You name it, I'll feed it. Here I go.
I could only see Kong put the girl down and hope that Driscoll had pulled her to safety. The fighters, with one plane missing now, continued making their runs on Kong. And he stood there, pawing at them, trying to swipe them out of the air. Modern bees against a giant. How much could Kong take? How many bullets? I don't know how long it took. All I could see was Kong weaving back and forth, always trying to fight off the planes. A monster fighting for his life. And then Kong began to topple, to stagger. The police pushed the crowds back, back. And the planes made one more run. And that is all. The story of Kong. King Kong. A yesterday that lived today. A story to frighten children? Unbelievable, impossible, incredible, whatever you choose to call it, but I know it to be the truth. And now you know it. Believe what you want. You can't change the truth.
Wow, Dave, that was a good find as we wrap up King Kong here on Erie House Radio. Do we have a moral for this?
I didn't have one for King Kong. No, it's too big a story for me.
There you go. Okay. Good enough. Let's come back tomorrow, shall we? At 6:30 Eastern. For yet another new, for us at least, version of War of the Worlds. Our annual October 30th show, War of the Worlds. And this one is from Buffalo, from the 1970s.
Yep.
Dave says it's really cool. There'll be lots of...
A lot of local landmarks in there, yeah.
Landmarks, periods of the commercials from the period. Awesome.
Yes.
Saturday Night Fever, discotheques.
Yes.
I think 72, I think, was a little early for that. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know. Cher was there. I don't think that was before disco. Real quick
yeah,
here, Weirdness Really Bad Movie will be on the virtual Gilardi Fest at 3 p.m. on Saturday and 3 p.m. on Sunday. Saturday with the Ghost Train and Sunday with I Bury the Living.
Awesome.
Go over to the Big Chuck Little John fan group Facebook page, and you get directions on how to watch it. There's three different ways you could watch it.
There you go. And that's Gilardi Fest Live with some Weirdness Really Bad Movie. And then, of course, we're going to be back again tomorrow at 6:30 for War of the Worlds. Thank you, CW, for joining us today.
Always a good time. Absolutely.
Let us bring the great one out. It's Mr. Price saying goodnight to all yuns. He's from Pennsylvania.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her.
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Till tomorrow.
There you go. We're beat.
Oh, you sound like, yeah. Wow, you've been working nonstop all week.
Well, it's not the radio show itself. It's real life is beating us up a little bit.
Yeah, real life is beating us up. And then you always get a burst of energy for the show, but then sometimes that burst of energy does only takes you just so far.
Yeah, it flings out
CW,
right about
now. I know I didn't get a chance to send it, but it's a little long, and we'll be using the full 2 hours tomorrow for the War of the Worlds. It's from WKBW 1972, did their own local version, and a lot of local landmarks and things like that, as well as commercials from 72 there in Buffalo, New York. That's the year after I left. So it was, but WKBW, this was the big KB. That was the big, probably the biggest radio station listened to in town. So, it was really cool. And we'll have to put a disclaimer. We'll say it right here too, that although some of the songs that stuff they'll be playing in it are not public domain, they are part of the show, and I don't think it was right to try and cut them out.
Yeah, it'll be good. We're still live for whatever reason. So says Fogsbane, but the studio says otherwise. Hey, if you can hear us live, thanks for joining us. I've got a miserable puppy to tend to.
Okay, and with that, I must be away as well, again, until tomorrow.
Right, and so you know what to do, CW.
Yes,
yep.
Knocking on the door. Mr. Andre, would you take us away, if you please?
Good night.
Good night.
It's time to say good night. What more is this say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. So the glory bowl up we the same, and it could think it could do good night. Good night.
Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Do you mind turning off the radio?